Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to bring back a very popular lady. Her name is Melissa Good, and she's going to chat about her new book, Winds of Change. It's a book with her Darren Carey series. Welcome, Missy.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Hi. How you doing?
Doing just fine. Thanks. How are you?
Fine. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
For those people who don't know about you, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself and your background?
Okay. Well, my name is Melissa Good, generally known online as Missy, and I work in the technology industry. And I have written a lot of fan fiction in the Xena and Gabrielle universe, also some published fiction, which was starring Carrie and, you know, Dev and Jeff, which is a new series that I'm writing. I don't write for a living. I write mostly for fun. For a living, I'm the manager of network operations for Norwegian Cruise Line. So I do a lot of the technical stuff that ends up in my books. Is that enough?
One of the things that a lot of people wanted me to ask you about was the origin. I mean, I know it was fan fiction, and I know it was based on the Xena universe, but they want to know what the origins of Darren Carey is.
Okay, the origins of the characters themselves, obviously they work in the technology industry, so the origins of their background come from my own life, because that's the industry that I work in. Prior to working here at Norwegian, I worked for EDS, Electronic Data Systems, which is what the fictional ILS is based on. So that's where they got their background. The characters themselves just occurred to me when we were in a break between seasons of Xena and Gabrielle, and I thought I would do a short story to kind of like that take over the summertime when we didn't have new episodes to watch, and I just never stopped writing about them.
Was the short story that you wrote the one with the Christmas shopping? Because I love that. That was the first one of your stories I read.
Well, the short story was the first section of Tropical Storm.
Oh,
I
really?
I didn't know there was going to be more than that when I wrote it, but it turned out otherwise. So I ended up writing several books about them and their lives in the technology industry and in South Florida, which is where I live. So a lot of the stuff that I write about in those novels comes from the world that I have around me and the technology industry that I participate in.
Well, it's so funny because between your books and between the show Burn Notice, I've come to love Florida, even though my only time there was between flights for 6 hours. So I feel like I know the area, even though I've never set foot there.
I will tell you the same advice that Gar often gives. If you want to fall in love with Florida, come in the wintertime. And if you don't want to fall in love with Florida, come in the summertime, which is 7 months a year. Unless you really like hot, muggy weather.
Yeah, yeah. Not my favorite, actually.
No.
Even
it's
though I live in San Diego.
Favorite.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you have good weather most of the year.
Most of the year.
Yeah.
Although right now our weather is wacko. It's like it's cool, and then we have it in the 90s, and then it goes back to cool, and it's just crazy right now.
Thanks for warning me, because I'll be out there in June for the Cisco convention.
Ah! Yeah, that's the way it is right now. I mean, I don't know if it's going to continue into the summer, but, yeah, it's been really weird.
A couple times I've been to San Diego, it's been beautiful there. And in Florida, in the winter, in November, December, January, February, and most of March, it is beautiful here. It is absolutely gorgeous. But the rest of the year, not so much.
I love your description of the area during the Christmas time with the twinkling lights and you guys, and Darren Carey are sunning themselves and everything. It's like the perfect opening.
It's all true.
It sounds like California.
Really not, because California tends to be much less, lot less humidity.
Oh, that, yeah.
In no, California.
We have humidity, not comparatively with Florida at all, but yeah, it does get humid. No, I just mean the warmth. I've had friends come out during the winter months, and they brought all their sweaters, and we had one of our heat waves, and they're like,
yeah.
I go, I'm looking at them, time to shop.
Yeah. I've done that in reverse. I've flown to New York when it's been 85 here in Florida and forgot to bring a jacket with me and had to stop in the airport and buy a jacket several times.
I know. Oh, yeah, and to buy proper clothes in a city during the time period you're there, sometimes it's impossible. I remember I was in Chicago, and I had stuff because I was going to be working for quite a while there, 6 months, but I didn't have a nice rain jacket, but it was rain season, and they didn't have rain jackets because they had it 3 months before. Trying to find something for that period is just impossible. Is that what happened with you with New York?
Not really, because New York, you can get anything you want at any time of the year. New York is, you know, they have, there's, you have no problem getting clothing at whatever time you go there, but it's just getting from the airport to where you can shop for it sometimes that can be a little tricky when it's snowing.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your new book, The Winds of Change.
Okay.
It's the latest adventure of Darren Carey, right?
It is. I was writing on it on the internet last year and the year before, and it basically is it catalogs a time of, in their lives that they're undergoing vast change. It's the time period is right after 9/11. And they had a lot of things that they got involved in with 9/11. So now that they're trying to get back to normal life, they find that it's not really normal anymore, and kind of change is overtaking them. And it does in the book. A lot of things change for them in terms of what they're doing professionally and things that they are planning to do and things of that nature. So the whole book itself is about, you know, the change and how sometimes change comes into your life when you least look for it. You can just decide whether to embrace it or to not. I think they have. So it was interesting to write because they've had a lot of the same background and a lot of the same sort of scenery around them for a long time. And in this book, it all completely changes. Well, except for Florida.
That's really interesting because 9/11 changed the world. I mean, every aspect of it was like World War I and World War II. I mean, it was a pivotal period. So it's interesting that I can't wait to read it because I love the series to see how that changed them.
Yeah, it does. And like I said, you can when you have characters that you've been writing for a very long time, sometimes it's hard to force them into change. So I was glad the characters were receptive to the change and just sort of went with it. Because sometimes you can try to say, well, you know, I need to shake things up for them, and they kind of shook things up for themselves because I discovered new things about the characters every time I write about them.
Isn't that cool? When your characters speak to you and shock you, it's so cool.
Oh, yeah, no, it's a constant surprise. I never know what never know what's going to come out of their mouth. I'm sitting there typing, and just all of a sudden stuff starts coming in. It's like things that you would never expect, which is one of the really nice things about writing because it's kind of a discovery of things when you write. So you spend a lot of time entertaining yourself.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's the fun of writing. That you never know what's going to come out of the character's mouth. People that don't write don't really understand that yes, it's coming from me, but really it's not. It's coming from the characters. It's just it's just a quirk of the writer's mind, but it's really fun.
There's a lot of different ways that you can write. Some people do write in a very scheduled way. In other words, they know where they want to go and they know how they want to get there. And, you know, and it's probably a lot easier for them. that way, because you don't have to go wandering off on the tangents. But I've never written like that. And so sometimes I think a story is going to go a certain way, and it just doesn't, because that's just not where the characters are going. And so that discovery is always a lot of fun, because you learn things. And every time you write, it's something new and different.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, even Agatha Christie made fun of that. There was a book of hers called Death in the Clouds, where she had a mystery writer, and his character had become so alive that he referred to the character as a person. And she's obviously making fun of herself when she's saying that.
But they are. Yeah, I mean, they become people, and people have idiosyncrasies, and people do surprise you. So characters do as well, and I think that's really one of the best parts about being a writer.
I do, too. I think so, too. Are you still writing fan fiction?
Oh, yeah. I still write...
Starring Carrie or Jean other
Gabrielle.
Stories?
No, Jean and Gabrielle. I think either the next one's up or the one's after, I forget. Yeah, and I think there's the next one's up, as a matter of fact. I love those characters. It's always a great choice to write them, not only because they're the genesis of so much of what I write into my other characters, because they are such profound archetypes, but because they become friends. And it's always fun to go back and visit them and see what's going on in their lives.
I agree. There's actually a question on chat. Her name's Barbara, and she wants to know, she said, I read the Dar and Carrie series years before they were published. Were there many changes in the published version compared to the fan fiction version?
In the first couple of books, yes. There's a lot of changes I had to make because the first online versions referenced real companies and real people. I had to take them out because I didn't really want them to come chasing after me, especially one of them, the CEO of the company that I was employed by at the time. So there are changes in the first couple of them, but as I wrote them more, when I wrote them onto the web version, the written versions are cleaned up and they have some differences. And I'll go back and I'll read through them and say, did I really mean for this to happen at this sort of time, sort of thing, and changing things up, moving things out of order, that sort of thing. But the essential story is the same.
That's interesting. That is really so. Was anybody at your company aware that you were writing fan fiction, and was there objections to it since it was online?
I've never had them come back and say anything to me. And I've always written under my real name, so if anybody wanted to do an elemental search, they certainly could have. The only time EDS was aware that there was something odd going on down in Florida is when I had to, in EDS, if you were taking secondary employment, you had to tell EDS about it so they could determine if it was conflict of interest. And I will tell you, if you work for the world's largest IT services company, there's nothing in the form that you have to fill out for secondary employment that says writer of a Xena episode. There's nothing there. There's a checkbox. You have to put everything as other, and then write like two paragraphs explaining yourself. But that's the only thing that EDS was aware of, that there was something weird going on with me down in Florida.
That's really interesting. I have another question in chat. Janice, she wants to know if there's going to be another Dar and Carrie book after Winds of Change.
Yes.
Okay.
Because if I don't let
them
go on vacation, they're going to kill me. Yeah, when I'm serious. If I don't let them go on that vacation, they're going to kill me.
Well, their vacations always end in disaster anyway.
Of course, but I still have to let them go.
They've been shot, kidnapped, planes have gone down. How can I get up on their
winter
vacations? poor guys. They just can't get a break, can they?
Oh, they managed to muddle through.
We have a caller. Hi, you're live on Chatting with Sherry. May I have your name and what city you're calling from?
Lex Parker. I'm in Arkansas right now.
Hi, Lex. Do you have a question for Missy?
is there kids in the future for these two to keep the line going?
No. They have two dogs. So many people have actually asked me that. And you know that if you've read my fanfic with Zena and Gabrielle, I have no objection for couples to have children. And I actually like writing children because they're a lot of fun, and it's a different pair of, and a new, fresh pair of eyes to look through. But for Dar and Carrie, unless they explicitly tell me that they want them, I have no plans for that. But you never know.
I was just thinking what Dar would do with a little toddler running around.
I know, but as a writer, it's very difficult because you have to keep track of the toddler. Okay, because every time I write in Gabrielle's story, I have to keep track of Dory. Where's Dory? Where are we going to put Dory? What's Dory been doing? You know, has she let things out of the hen house? How do I keep up with her? Because the readers won't let you forget about the kids. So you got to figure out how to deal with them.
Yeah, I'm on your Merewolf group. I know.
Yeah.
Well, it's like what happened in the series with Eve. You know,
yeah,
they had to make her grown up.
That's exactly what the problem is. If the characters demand them, sure. But so far they've shown no their biological clocks aren't ticking except for puppies.
We lost the caller. I guess she was having phone issues. I'm sorry about that, caller. We have a question from Janice. She wants to know if Dar and Carrie will move to present time in any of your fan fiction or books.
That's a really difficult question because I have had several conversations actually on the list about that, because it would be much easier for me in terms of technology and all the rest of it to move them into current. The problem is it takes so long to write the books, it's really hard for me to keep up with technology, which changes so fast. So in the respect of that, it's almost easier for me to have them past dated because I know what has happened in terms of technology, and we can accommodate that. If I move them forward, what do you do? Do you just pretend the middle years haven't happened? Because I write them almost real time. When I write the books, it's almost real time. So do I just, okay, we're just skipping forward to 2015. I'm just not sure how to do that. So the answer is I don't know. I would like to. Because it makes it easier in one respect, but I really don't know, other than just saying, okay, everybody, we're jumping ahead 10 years here. I don't want to resort to putting in deep freeze. That's science fiction, and that's not what that series is about. So I don't know.
Yeah.
If anybody can
true.
Come up with an easy way to do it, I'm all for it, but it's very hard.
Well, I mean, because they live in that world, you know, the world you're in of things changing every second, I can see why you want to keep it back in 2000, because at least you know what happened. You know what happened then. You're there. You've been there. You went through it. It's like history. Well, it is history. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So I don't know. If anybody can come up with a good way for me to do that, send me a note. And I'm definitely open to suggestions other than just doing a MacGuffin with them. I don't know how to bring them forward in time, unless the general consensus is we'd like to just see what happens 15 years later.
MacGuffin is a term Alfred Hitchcock invented, in case people don't know what that means.
The deus ex machina, just sort of doing it by trickery, kind of like what they did with Eve. Really, they had to get her into adulthood. So they had to do, that really you don't have any good way of doing that. And so if I jump in the head 15 years, I'm going to have to be answering questions for the rest of my life. What happened in that 15 years? Why can't we see that?
Yeah, they can't exactly put Dar and Carrie in a cave for 100 or whatever years.
Yeah. So it's hard. It's hard mostly because of the way I write. Because I don't expend a lot of time in the book itself, whatever the book time period the book is, it generally doesn't account for a lot of physical time. It's usually a specific event in their lives, and it takes 700 pages for me to describe like a month.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I have another question from chat. Her name is Barbara. She wants to know how you decide how you go into your steamier scenes.
There's no real decision about it. It just comes out of the writing of the characters. You try not to, at least I try not to, if you're writing erotic scenes, which really shouldn't, that actually doesn't describe what I write. Finally erotic. They used to call me the half-alt bard because I just would only go to a certain point and then fade out. So that it just comes out of the, what the characters are feeling. Sometimes they feel like they want to make love, and then sometimes they don't. You know, it's like anybody else. I mean, I wouldn't think that anybody in their real life, except for maybe porn stars, spend most of their time having sex.
That's true. And also, you're not, sometimes it's, somebody asked me about one of my books. They said, why did they have sex at that point, and why didn't they plan for it? And I'm like, I was like,
plan?
Do you plan?
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 If you're having to plan for sex, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Who plans for it? Even if you do have an idea, it doesn't go the way you think it's going to go, so why would my characters do that?
I think mostly because I only go to a certain point in sex scenes, because after that it becomes mechanical.
Yeah.
And I
and
like
also,
to stay in the realm of emotion rather than go into the mechanics. Does that make sense?
I think that it's also something that's best left to the imagination, that people know how it works. They don't need the mechanics of it.
Well, some people do, and some people really enjoy reading that kind of the really explicit erotica. I've just never been one of those people. So I guess when I started writing, it just took after that.
I think I go with you on that one. I'm just... I think that's why I like your book so much. It's more my imagination.
Well, the other thing is, it doesn't mean that the other way of writing it is wrong. You know, everybody writes with their heart, and people read with their heart, and they have to read, and whatever they get out of it is what they get out of it. So.
Oh, I absolutely agree. There's nothing wrong with explicit writing. I think that's fantastic, especially if you can do it well. That's amazing, but not one of my talents. Now, my next question is about some stuff about Xena and the convention and
sure.
stuff like that. First of all, how do you feel about the world of Xena growing instead of diminishing? Since more and more young people are coming into the world of Xena and Gabrielle.
It makes total sense. It makes total sense because the characters as they're written are such archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
I think they fulfill a real need for having a hero that you can look up to, that people cotton on to regardless of when they, how old they are. I think... Xena, somebody asked me this question once, and they asked me about why Xena was so attractive to a lot of people. And I remember when I went to my first science fiction convention. It was a tiny little science fiction convention in West Miami Beach, and there was probably 3 guests there and a bunch of tables with this merchandise on it. And I had always been a voracious reader. I think I finished the entire science fiction section of the library by our house by the time I was maybe 8. So, you know, and I always really liked technology as far as that was at that time. I took apart telephones. I mean, I was the nerd from early on. And that was strange for a lot of people. I didn't have a lot of people around me that had that sort of urge. My parents were not technical. Most of my friends in the neighborhood weren't technical. They, you know, they viewed me pretty much as the nerd with the projector like you would do anybody in like a sitcom. So when I went to my first science fiction convention, I had the first experience of community. And, wow, this is my tribe. These are my people. There are people here arguing about the inclination of Spock's ears, and they're mad about it. You know,
mm-hmm.
The first time you see that, the first time you feel that community, that's life-changing. And I think that's what Xena was for gay women, because... you walked into a Xena convention, you looked around and you're like, oh, wow. And I think having that example and those characters in the way that that Renaissance pictures didn't back off, attracting that fan base, really did make it something very special in the hearts of a lot of people. It didn't hurt that it came along right as the Internet came into being, and so you had much better and much more voracious ways to share with people than if people, because it used to be if you did fanfic, I mean, you wrote zines, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
The zines were in a box in the comic area of some convention, and you leafed through them, and they
and
were printed
on
a mini.
You had to sit down on the floor and go through it.
Right, and you've made them on a mimeograph, which nobody that probably is listening is going to understand what that is, but I can still smell that ink. but with the Internet, that all changed. With the Internet, you could not only fire your imagination with these characters, you could share it with the entire planet in under 60 seconds. So Dina was at the very start of that. Yeah. Dina was at the very start. So it doesn't surprise me that it continues to be popular.
Fan fiction and TV shows are now, it's boom, that, I mean, everything is fan fiction.
It is. It's
mainstream. Amazing.
Sherry, you're on Twitter, you've got William Shatner arguing with somebody about shipping Snow Queen. How much more mainstream do you want to get?
I love that. I love that he even gets involved in it.
It's amazing. It's amazing because now it's completely normal. Now nobody even thinks twice about Once Upon a Time having 17 different varieties of shipping. Okay, when Xena and Gabrielle were out there, you remember the big fights that used to happen between the shippers and the subtesters? I think that was really the first time that was publicly available for everyone to see. Now it's now 1,000 people can ship a different ways and just argue all day on Twitter about it or on Reddit, and it just brings everybody into the community. It brings everybody into being able to be a maker themselves. They don't have to rely on the showrunners to be makers. They can just take it and run with it. And I think that is a good thing. I think it's much better to have people on the Internet doing two-way participation in this, because before everyone just watched the television. Now everybody watches the television and they enhance it and take it and make things of it and do conventions and write books and do fanfic and make pictures. It's, I think, a much better place to be.
And music videos.
Yes.
Everybody who's creative can take part in all that Internet wonder. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really amazing.
Exactly. And I think it's better for the properties, too, because when you get people, you get the community engaged. Look at how long the Star Trek community was engaged. I mean, they were engaged from day one, and they haven't stopped. And
they never have stopped.
The Xena community is going to keep
on.
They never will. And the Xena community is going, and I don't think they'll stop until they have either another series or a movie. I think that they will just keep going because these characters are so engaging and so loved. By people that they're interested in them and they want to see what happens to them.
Well, I mean, the power of fandom can be amazing. Look at what Star Trek fans did. They actually got a shuttle named after the Enterprise. I mean, you never know what fandom can do.
I think that was greater than fandom. I don't think it was a hard sell. Honestly, because I think there's a lot of people in NASA and in the Air Force who are rocket scientists who have that as a background.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, and people that are astronauts and NASA engineers have basically said that a lot of the stuff that they did, and I've seen interviews with them, was inspired by Star Trek, especially diagnostic equipment and things like that.
Yep.
Like Bones tricorder. They're still trying to get it perfected.
They will. Now you'll have wristwatches that keep track of your blood pressure, and you'll have other things that you wear on you that will be able to keep track of your biometric sensors. And, we will make that happen. And frankly, Star Trek is not a bad model to make this happen. It was a very positive and very forward-looking view of the future. It wasn't apocalyptic or anything along those lines. You wanted to be in that future.
Yeah, that's true, and I still love that. That's one of the things Like Xena, I don't think I'll ever let go of my love for Star Trek because of that positive, loving look toward the future. Xena has the same thing. The positive, loving message. I think that's why they're going to last for a long time.
Oh, I think they'll be around for a while.
Yeah. I mean, just look at the outpouring of mourning for when Leonard Nimoy passed away. I mean, everybody.
That was really tragic.
Yeah, yeah. And like my dad, he gave up smoking years ago, and yet it still got him. Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah, I think he found out a little too late.
Yeah. I mean, smoking is something that, it just is one of those things that, I know it's personal choice and stuff, but people don't realize what it does to your body.
No, but I think people are getting more educated.
Thank God. Thank God. Okay, on to a happier subject. You wrote 2 episodes of Xena. And they were both very popular. I love them both. Are you have you considered attempting to write either a screenplay or a teleplay?
Honestly, no. I really enjoyed every minute of my experience with Xena. I would not have traded it for anything in the world. That whole process was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed working with the writing teams, both at Renaissance and Pacific Renaissance. It was an amazing thing to be part of that journey. It was an amazing thing to know that of those 100 and some episodes, 2 of them are mine.
Yeah.
But honestly, that is not something that I had ever looked at as a career choice. And because I have, because what I do in technology is something that I really, really, really enjoy and really, really love doing. And I never really thought about doing writing for hire. I don't know that actually would suit me. I don't know. I mean, I was part of the process and I delivered everything as requested to them. But I think if I had to do that for a long-term thing for someone else, I think it would make writing a lot less fun.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if that's not your forte, then that makes it less of a joy, more of a task.
The writing part of it was fun, but the interacting with everybody and part of that team, which was a fantastic team, was a lot more fun, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, because you get to bounce ideas and all that, and it's a community effort. Yeah, I could see that.
Plus, which it really jazzed my mom. When she got to actually see those episodes of my name on the screen, let me tell you something. That made her an extremely happy woman.
Aww, that's beautiful. That is so beautiful. Yeah. And like I said, they're 2 of the most popular. I love them. I love both of them. They're just fantastic shows that you wrote. Go ahead.
My mother actually preferred Coming Home. One of her favorite characters in the Xenaverse was Ares with Kevin Smith.
Oh,
the fact that I got to write for him, she was over the moon. And of course, she was devastated.
And he was funny in that.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him. I loved Kevin when he was funny.
He was a very gentle, very really beautiful person.
I would have loved, I saw him on stage, but I would have loved to have a conversation with him. He seemed like exactly the way he described. Mm.
No, I'm perfectly happy making a living in technology.
I got 2 questions online. One is from Jenna. She wants to know if you'll be going to the GCLS conference in New Orleans.
I can't. And I'm sorry that I can't, but I actually will be on a business trip during that period. I have to go to Germany to start up meetings for the new bill that we were delivering in October. So unfortunately, I can't. I was really actually hoping that I'd get to go because I've never been to New Orleans, and I really wanted to go.
Yeah, I've heard that it's an amazing city. I've never been there either. Mm-hmm. I have a question from Barbara. She wants to know, do you write with an outline and planning, or are you a pantser? I guess she means flying by the seat of your pants.
I just sit down and start writing.
Yeah.
I have a general idea of what I want to see. Yeah. I have a general idea of what I want the story to say or what I want the story to be, and where it starts, and I have some idea of where it ends, but everything else that happens in the middle is up to the character.
I think when I try to do an outline, I do scribble notes on the side of my notebook. I write longhand first, saying, okay, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. But nine times out of ten, none of that comes out. I'd go in a totally different direction. I just can't outline.
I can't read my own handwriting. It would never work. I look at these little scrolls on the page and say, I don't know what that's supposed to be, and just start typing. That's why I type everything. I'm left-handed. I can't write longhand.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds like my dad was left-handed. He used to say the same exact thing.
It's just
yep. But I could always read his handwriting.
I can't read my own, so he was lucky, I guess.
How do you feel about the convention being the last convention this year?
The last convention? As opposed to the last convention or the last convention?
Well, I mean, everybody's saying different things. Steve says, no, it'll never be the last convention. Some other fans say, yes, it's over. Other fans say, no, it's never going to be over. I mean, it's kind of controversial. So I just wanted your input.
The only thing that's controversial about it is the fact that some people, if they think it's the last convention, because I was at the last convention, the first one, and people made sacrifices people make sacrifices to be at that convention because it was the last convention. So then when you say, well, we were just kidding, there's actually going to be another one, I don't know how that makes me feel. You know, that's, for me, I was going because I wanted to go and I wanted to see the folks. There are a lot of friends in the fandom, and I had a great time sitting in the lobby chatting with a lot of people. So I don't know. I had some strong feelings about that convention, it being the first last convention. That I don't know that I would feel the same way at the second last convention or the last convention. I think that as long as people love Xena, there's always going to be a community and there's always going to be conventions. Whether they're official conventions or not is a different story. But I think that there'll always be people gathering to talk about Xena because she was really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I'm one of those people. I sacrificed a lot to go to that convention. I splurged more money than I should have to, you know, do things. And then, boom, oh, by the way, here we're having another last convention. I couldn't afford it. I spent a lot of money at the last one.
And I know a lot of people felt the same. But then there were other conventions because there's a lot of new fans, and they wanted to have the experience of going to conventions. So, you know, I mean, I think that's great for them. I just... You know, I was actually out of town when they had the convention this time, and I knew I couldn't go, so it wasn't a question of, well, do I go to the last convention or not? I couldn't. So if I hadn't had a scheduling conflict, I might have. Just because I like to see the people there, I have a great time. I love talking about, you know. So, you know, that's always the most fun about the convention.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's the family. It's the family. You want to see your friends. You want to hug and talk. And, I mean, I was sort of heartsick that I couldn't go. I kind of kept in touch by Facebook because I couldn't go.
Well, Facebook and Twitter did a good job of keeping up with it.
Especially the groups, the Xena groups. If it wasn't for that. And Steve, of course, with all his wonderful pictures.
Course,
and because that helped too. And his videos. So that helped me feel like I was there even though I couldn't go.
And then I know that everybody plans the Xena retreat now that the last con is over. So, and I know that there's some European conventions that are out there. I think as long as people really like talking about it, that there'll always be something out there for people to gather and the gathering of the clans.
I also think there'll be fan conventions.
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm that's what I mean. But fan conventions are hard. I was actually part of the. I was a small part of the incredibly talented team that put on the BARDcon, and it's hard work. So if people are passionate, put in that kind of hard work, then it will undoubtedly be a success. Because if you want bad enough to have something like that, to do all that hard work, it'll end up being successful.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. We only have about 4 minutes. Do you have any new projects coming up, and do you have any events coming up?
I don't. Well, I have events, but not any that would be relevant to this audience. Most of them are work events. And like I said, I'll be in San Diego in June for the Cisco Live, which is always a lot of fun. If you're nerdish, it's fun. If you're not into technology, not really something you'd want to walk into, because it's the most nerdish and most technical convention probably that there is. It's network engineers and 25,000. So, newest projects, I think I'm writing a Jeff and Dev book right now. That's my new series, my new sci-fi series. And that'll probably take as long as it takes to write it. So that's probably the next on the publishing list. And then we'll see what happens after that.
Cool. I have we still have a little time. I have another question on chat. They want to know if there's any TV series on right now that gives you the urge to write fanfic about.
I've never had an urge to write fanfic before or after Xena.
So Xena's your baby.
But to be fair to the I'm sure fantastic stuff that's going on television today, I don't watch television. So it's sort of a skewed question because it assumes that I actually watch stuff like, you know, whatever it is that's going on, Game of Thrones and that sort of thing. It is quite possible that if I got engaged into one of those that I would have the urge to write about the characters. But between Xena and Gabrielle and The Conqueror and Jess and Dev and Zara and Carrie, I'm out of time. I honestly try to write a page to a page and a half of stuff a day, 365 days a year. That's what I do instead of watching television. So I don't really have much chance to re-engage with new characters.
Do you, I know you write a lot, but do you read books? What's your favorite books that you like to read? Do you have anything, series that you're reading or anything that you relax with?
Mostly mysteries. I like Agatha Christie, and I also like Ellis Peters.
I don't actually
read in any of the genres that I write in.
I just fall in love with the new mystery series, Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries, Franny Fisher. Have you ever read them? Oh, they're so good. Talk about strong women characters.
Yeah. So I have all the Miss Marple books, and I have Brother Cadfael are all on my Kindle device, Kindle readers as part of my phone and my tablet and all that. And when I have some downtime, that's usually what I'm reading.
Cool.
If I'm not writing.
That's cool. I mean, I understand that completely. We're out of time.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being on the show. You can go back to work. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
No problem. It was a pleasure, Sherry, as always.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting, Carrie.